אוקיי, אז הוא בגין חבס הלבבס, שער הבחינה, פרק שני. We've been discussing the concept of learning to study, to contemplate and internalize the chesed of Hashem and the greatness of Hashem that we see in the world around us. So here in this parak, the chavis alvavis moves into the next question. And he begins as follows. He says, Ach, im anu chayovim livchoin babruim imloi. Is this an obligation? Are we actually obligated to engage in this contemplation, observing? Neymar, will say as follows. Ki abchina babruim, studying, contemplating Hashem's creations, v'avo asraya mehem l'chokma sabari yizbarach, and using them to demonstrate Hashem's wisdom, anu chayavim ba min hamuskol, min hakosuv, u min hakabalah. This is something that obligates us, and if you remember, we keep referring back to what the Chavis Halvavis defined as the three sources of emes: intellect, Torah shebiksav, and Torah shebalpeh, chazal. These are the three sources of truth. He says, we see from all these three sources that yes, we are obligated to engage in this. Now, I want to bring home a point again about Shaar HaBechina, which could sometimes get confused since we skip Shaar HaYichud. Remember, we the Chavis Halvavis really starts, the first Shaar in Chavis Halvavis is Shaar HaYichud, that's establishing Hashem's oneness, or if we'll talk in more practical terms, proving the truth of Hashem, proving Hashem's existence and understanding it. So we skipped that for the reasons that we discussed back then. In general, that it's not really a practical limud for us today. But then moving into Shaar HaBechina, without learning Shaar HaYichud, can create the impression that Shaar HaBechina, studying Hashem's creations, is for the purpose of understanding that there is a Hashem. But no, we have to remember that it's not really the discussion here. That was already discussed in Shaar HaYichud. We're past the stage where we've established Hashem's truth, Hashem's oneness. Shaar HaBechina is about learning to experience it. It's the next stage. Now that you know that there is a Hashem, how do you go to the next stage and experience Hashem in your life, experience Hashem in the world around you? Make Hashem a reality in the experience of your life. So that's his question here. Is this something obligatory? Or is it, okay, you know, it's a beautiful thing to do, but it's not really a chiyuv. So he says, it is a chiyuv. We see this from Seichel, from the Torah, and from Torah Shebal Peh. Mina Musko, now he explains his Seichel reason. Let's understand this. Kya Seichel Meid, he says, the intellect, Seichel dictates that the advantage that a human has over a non-human, medaber is the term in the kadmonim for a human versus an animal. There's chai, that's animals in general, all of life, and the medaber is the human. We're not going to get into now why that's how we characterize the human, but medaber means a human. What is the advantage of the human over the non-human? Hurak b'Yisrael hakarosoi, so first of all, let's just lay down something fundamental. It's a given by the Chavis Halvavis that there has to be an inherent difference between man and animal. Meaning, man is not just the most intelligent of beasts, as some would tend to believe. Man is a whole different plane. Within the animal world, within the animal kingdom, there are varying levels of intelligence. And if you come from an atheistic place, you might say that man is at the top of that pyramid. But no, we're coming and saying that man is something completely different. What is the difference between man and animal? It's his ability to live the deeper life, meaning to live beyond the senses. Animals can be very intelligent, right? You can have dogs can be very intelligent, and Plenty of animals can be very intelligent, but they live in the here and now. They live in the here and now. You won't see animals making calculations and decisions based on long-term considerations unless it's instinctive, right? Ants will hoard things. It's instinctive. It's not that they're really planning their future. So animals live in the here and now. They can use their intellect to enhance their here and now. But they're not living with anything beyond the senses. Whereas man is capable of doing that. And here, let's just to illustrate what this means in a basic way, with the way Shimshon Pinkus put it. He said, you can see let's say you and a cat are strolling down the street. You and a cat are strolling down the street. Now, you're both on exactly the same street. You both see cars around you. You both see billboards, street signs, etc. Now, what does the cat see? Well, the cat sees you, big scary thing. That's far enough, not threatening. And then the cat sees a hunk of blue, and then a hunk of red. The fact that it's a car doesn't mean much more than what its shape is. And when you see it, it's not like you think to yourself, oh, this is a car. I can tell, 1 minute, I'm going to make a diagnosis here. There's that distinct shape, and there are four wheels on it. That means car. Car is something that can travel. You see the car, you automatically see a vehicle of travel. You know, there isn't much of a process you have to go through, and the cat is a completely different place. It doesn't see that at all. But if you take it further, let's say there's a big sign up, a billboard or something, has a very humorous advertisement. Humorous advertisement is written in letters, okay? It's written in letters. Very a sharp and witty line. You look at that sign and you smile. You laugh. It has a certain life to it. Whatever the letters are saying, it has a certain life to it. And it's part of what creates for you the character of the street. You walk through the street. There are funny advertisements all around. This is an entertaining street to walk through. As far as the cat goes, he's living in a completely different place. In the place that he's living in, the billboard is two-dimensional colors. The car is three-dimensional colors. That's as far as he goes, right? He doesn't see any humor there. He doesn't see any character. There's no life there. So really, you're both in the same street looking at exactly the same things, but you are in completely different places. Completely different places. Or, other examples. Let's say you're walking with that same cat a little further down the street after you saw the humorous advertisement. And now, you hear a siren going up and down. Hey, you hear missile attack. Chas v'shalom, you start looking for shelter. The cat just hears sounds. The truth is, that's not such a good example, because the cat also has sounds that he identifies as signs of danger. Let's scratch that example. But you might hear and see things that are accessible to you as a human. Use the example of the advertisement, of the billboard, etc., which really puts you into a whole different dimension of understanding and experience than that cat when you're walking down that very same street. So, in other words, man's intelligence enables him to live beyond just what the senses are feeding him. And the Chavis HaLavis says that really what this is about is man, yeah, is meant to live in a different place. Man is meant to be operating with a much more refined sense of the reality around him, as is manifested in reading a billboard. But what it also is, he says, first and foremost, it's living with the realization that there is a Hashem there. That is, first and foremost, what that difference is supposed to manifest in. You have intelligence. You're capable of living in a different reality. So then, don't just live like the cat, a world where it's primarily about the senses and you're using your intelligence just to relate to the senses. How do I get more food? How do I get better food? Etc. Use your intelligence. How do I get where I need to get? But it's to be living a deeper experience, to be really connected to what's going on around you in the way that your intelligence as a person enables you. So therefore, we come back to our discussion from last week. Last week we were talking about learning to experience Hashem by studying the signs of His presence, by studying His fingerprints, so to speak, in your life, in the world around you. You want to bring it to a place where you've internalized it to the extent that you sense Hashem around you. You feel Him operating around you. He's a real presence in your life experience. Now, what the Chovos HaLevavos is saying, that is the most basic way of justifying the difference between a human and an animal. If there's all kinds of ways that you're going to be living a more enhanced existence as a human, a more enhanced consciousness of what's going on around you, through all the different input that a human can access that an animal can't, the first place that that should be, the most basic place that that should be, is in simply experiencing Hashem in the world around you. And then he goes on to say, this is a point that the Messias Yeshua makes as well, that a person who doesn't do this, a person who his life really is like a behemoth in the sense of he has his senses, he lives responding to his senses, and he also has a greater level of intelligence, so he uses that to enhancing his senses, the experience of his senses. He uses his intelligence to make even better food. He uses his intelligence to create an even more comfortable setting to live in. It's all about just enhancing. Since I'm so intelligent, I can make the experience of my senses that much more pleasant than that of a cat. A cat can hear. I can actually hear sophisticated music. A cat can see. I can use my intelligence to get around to more places and see more beautiful sights. So, Chovos HaLevavos says, then you are basically betraying your status as a human being because you haven't taken your existence to that deeper level. And if so, he says, that doesn't just take you down to the level of an animal, but it actually takes the person to a place that's lower than the animal. Why? Because every animal utilizes its capacity to the fullest. Whatever faculties it does have, whatever abilities it does have, it utilizes in order to live its own life, the cat life, the donkey life, the spider life, to the fullest. Whereas if man goes as far as living with the experience of an animal, so he hasn't maximized his own capacity. He's doing less than an animal does. Because there's still more to be utilized. There's more to him. There's more depth to him that just stays wasted and unused. So he says that, yeah, in order to justify your status as a person, you have to be living a deeper life, a life of a greater awareness just of your reality, of what's going on around you. And the most basic level of living the reality of what's going on around you is experiencing Hashem. Everything else is only the next levels. So that is the gist of his Perek Sheni. We're not going to go through now the psukim that he cites to this effect. The gist of what he's telling us in this Perek Sheni. So now let's move on. We'll move on to the third Perek. And here he starts giving us a hands-on instructions as to how to go about this business of Bechina. Now here I want to say that Chovos HaLevavos really developed this into a whole life project. For most of us, this is not going to be something that we're really going to turn into the pursuit that the Chovos HaLevavos is describing. Now, people who did, my Rebbe Reb Avigdor Miller did. It was an active pursuit, a very focused active pursuit into really studying the world around him and himself, his own body, etc., for this purpose. But if we're going to talk practically, if we're not talking about really assuming a whole different way of living, this is more going to be something that will work into our lives and do to an extent. So we'll go through the Chovos HaLevavos in a bit more of a cursory way. Not really to the fully developed extent that he is laying it down. So first of all, he just starts laying out for us all the different areas of the Bria to keep aware of. And these are things that, again, we can find the circumstances and the times when we can be busy with this. So he says, the concept of Bechina encompasses all the different parts of the world, from the atmosphere, from the earth itself, from all the different parts of earth, to the more focused parts of Bechina. You take an animal or any other form of life, as we'll see soon, the main specimen for Bechira is your own body for Bechina. And you start breaking it down to its elements, not just, oh, this is a great animal because it does X, Y, Z. It is that too. But you start breaking it down to its elements in terms of why is it structured this way? What do all of its different limbs do? Why is each limb formed in the way it is? It's a very, very layered avoida that encompasses, it's as complex as the Bria itself is. So, just to give some examples, it begins with, appreciating the greater forces of nature. He says later, just to appreciate, take note of the benefit of the different times of year. The winter, which gives a chance for the seeds to really take root in the ground and to be saturated and to be ready to start sprouting as the winter starts clearing the way for the spring, for the summer, which enables things to actually start sprouting and growing. And then as you move into the summer, it really ripens them, it bakes them, it prepares them. You move into the fall, which is basically kind of like a declaration of, okay, we're clearing out, now a clearance sale, we're moving everything off the shelves now, now's the time to finish this part of the season, this round of production is closing up, and you move back into the winter for the next round. Reb Sadeh Goyen said, I think we quoted this the other week perhaps, that the world with all the cooperating forces of nature is one very great food factory. All the forces of nature are working together to produce food. You have the seas, which occupy about two-thirds of the world, and they are all there to provide, well, among other things, in a very basic way, the water supply for Earth, for that third of the world where it's really happening, which is really the focus. Earth, the land, the dry land. So how does that work? So seawater is very salty. So you have all the forces of nature start working together. You have the sea, and Hashem commands his mighty servants to get to work. The sun shines over the sea, causes the higher levels of the water to evaporate. And by the way, the frost of the sea, when the frothing of the sea, when the waves are beating back and forth in the middle of the sea, the purpose of that is to create the froth that is more easily evaporates, rises up, it's purified. Now the seawater has been purified because it rises up without the salt. It moves up into the parts of the atmosphere where it already starts condensing into packages, big packages of water that can be moved from place to place in the form of clouds. And then the winds get to work, transporting them to where they'll be useful, moving them over to dry land, where then again changes in atmosphere that are planned and manipulated by Hashem cause the rain to actually start falling. And that there is where the rain starts cooperating with Earth, which is with its own properties, to start really sprouting forth the seeds that are there. The sun continues its function in its role in causing the sprouting and the ripening, etc. This is after its role in just getting the water up out of the sea and beginning the process of moving it over onto dry land. Hashem has this whole great system in place as one massive food production factory. This is one level of things, to be noting all the various levels of the atmosphere to whatever extent. I'm not going to elaborate on them because I don't know it offhand. But the various levels of the atmosphere and what they support. It's only a thin layer around Earth that actually supports our life. Air is not nothing. Air is a whole recipe of elements that provides us with life. It's not nothing. If you go a little higher up, it isn't there anymore. It's a thin belt around Earth, all there for the purpose of enabling us to live. And then you start breaking it down more. You have the plants that are a major part of also making Earth a livable place for us in terms of their role in purifying the air by absorbing the carbon dioxide, etc., etc. And you have the whole animal kingdom. The animal kingdom is a very balanced kingdom that's working together to enable Earth to function in the way that it needs to function. A few examples. You know that one of the, you have the rabbit population, let's say somewhere in, up in the forests of Siberia. You have a rabbit population. You know what one of the biggest helpers of the rabbit population is? It's the wolves in the area. The wolves in the area are a very important piece in the survival of the rabbit population in any given area, in such an area. Why? Because if the rabbits were to multiply endlessly, they would use up all the food for the area, and they would all just die out. There wouldn't be enough food to go around. The wolves keep the rabbit population trimmed to an extent that they can continue to survive. Now, it doesn't seem like a very friendly way of doing it. This is all part of the way Hashem sets up that very, very big system of nature. Now, there's all kinds of cooperation in this sense. Rabbi Avigdor Miller would often tell about the example of, it was somewhere out in the West where they were having a problem with black snakes. They were, and the sheriff's office publicized that anybody who brings in a dead black snake, you shoot a black snake, you bring it into the sheriff's office, you get a prize of $5 or whatever it was. They were offering a bounty on the head of every black snake. So all the farmers went out to shoot black snakes. And then after a while, all the crops were being overrun with field mice. So then they understood that, yeah, the black snakes were there to perform a certain function. They were there to keep the field exterminated. Also something of a pest, okay? Many of the insects play very important roles in aerating the ground, making the soil loose enough in order to be able to do what it needs to do in terms of sprouting things. The world is a very, very big interactive system, which is perfectly balanced. That's why another reason why extinction of a species is like considered such a big problem. It's not just the animal lover agenda, which we can decide how much seriousness we attribute to that. But no, when a species goes extinct, what happens is that throws every species is a very it has its place in the whole system of life in that area. And when a species goes extinct, it can throw the whole system of the whole area into an imbalance that can carry over across continents. Some butterfly goes extinct. That means that the food supply of whatever used to eat that butterfly is now gone, which means that its predator is now suffering, etc., etc., etc. And this is something that can cross continents. That's part of the reason that they fight extinction in order not to let the equilibrium of the whole system get thrown off. So this is, the Chavis HaLevis tells us that there's a lot to study here. There's so many aspects of wisdom, of Chachma. The way I saw this expressed, we kept an animal book in the house that had a lot of descriptions about many of the different forms of wildlife. So there was just one sentence that put this out so well. They said when they talk about they were talking about the predators and animals, and the prey animals, and they're talking about, I forgot exactly what it was, but the different mechanisms that the predators have that enable them to catch their prey, and then all the different mechanisms that the prey animals have that enable them to escape, is that it's harder to determine which is the bigger wonder, that the prey ever manages to escape or that the predator ever actually manages to catch something. They're so well equipped. And again, this balance of the predator versus the prey is all part of that equilibrium, that balance that Hashem is trying to create, and he makes the race fair. Just one interesting example of this is that you have the cheetah, right? Everybody knows that is the fastest running land animal. A cheetah is the fastest running land animal. It can run up to 70 miles an hour. The cheetah, it preys on gazelles, antelopes, etc. So these gazelles, they can't run as fast as the cheetah. They can run up to 60 miles an hour. But so that seems to already set the game in an unfair place. The cheetah can always catch them. No, there's a big difference. The cheetah can accelerate very quickly to 70 miles an hour, and he can run at that speed for a half a minute. After half a minute, he tires, he has to slow down. These antelopes can run at 60 miles an hour for an extended period of time without tiring. So this mamish balances out the contest. If the antelope manages to keep ahead of the cheetah for half a minute, he won. If the cheetah was fast enough to get close enough to him before making his dash, then he'll win. It's balanced. You see how Hashem set it up? Zele umazeh. There are many, many examples of how perfectly balanced the world is in these ways. And this is without really getting into, if you actually get into the science of it and really start studying it, it's endless. But the Chavis HaVavis then goes on to say that, yes, what we're describing here is endless, and he gives many, many more examples of this. But the question is, where do you start? The question is, where do you start? Where do you start this study of learning to see Hashem's fingerprints in the world all around you? So he says, you start in the place closest to home. What's the place closest to home? Well, I'll illustrate it with two little anecdotes. One from the Brisker Rav, where somebody told him about wanting to go to the Alps in order to see the Nifloes HaBoyre, the wonders of Hashem's creation. So the Brisker Rav said, going to the Alps in order to see the wonders of Hashem's creation is laziness. Because if you're really, really ready to apply yourself to seeing Hashem's wonders, you could see plenty of it exactly where you are, on your street, in your home. And to bring out the same point, the way it was expressed by the Chazon Ish, he said that people are taken by the wonder of seeing, let's say, an elephant. But he said that a person whose head is screwed on tight should really be no less taken when he sees a human being opposite him. Because the truth is that the wonder of the human being is not any less amazing and miraculous than an elephant. He said, what is it? It's the novelty. It's not a seicheldik appreciation of Hashem's wisdom, of Hashem's ability. It's the novelty. So therefore, the Chavis HaLevavos goes on to say that really it begins with ourselves. It begins with our own body. You want to start with this business of appreciating. Sometimes you may need to go to somewhere like the Alps or somewhere else to get a jump start, to be inspired, to be moved, to see, yes, there's an amazing world out there. But if you really want to apply yourself to this right, the place really to focus your efforts to start with is your own body. We've talked about this. We're not going to get into details now. We've talked about learning to see the miracles, the wonders of all the various parts of your body, of its function, of all of its faculties. But Lamaisa, this is what the Chavis HaLevavos is saying, that really, that's the place to start. That's the place to start. And that's the place to focus on. And this is also, the aspect of this is that it really brings together, like we've been discussing, the two tracks, the wonders of Hashem, the wisdom of Hashem, along with his chesed, and experiencing not just his greatness, but also his very great care for you. Now, the Chavis HaLevavos goes on to conclude this perek with a very profound mashal. And he says as follows. he says the world is full of wonders. And the world is full of things that we're benefiting from. And like we've been discussing, a person can live on choose the level he wants to live on. Either he could just live on the level of taking it all in, using it all, eating it all, enjoying it all without ever giving it another thought. Or he can connect to what the Chavis HaVavis is called the Ruchnius of it. What it's all really conveying, the significance of, in a change of season, he is experiencing Hashem moving the world to the next stage in the food he's going to provide for us. Rabbi Avigdor Miller would say it, was that you wake up in the morning and it's raining outside, so instead of saying, oh, drat, I had plans for the day, he says, you see the summer's food being prepared for you now. Think of the meals you're going to eat at the end of the year. That's being prepared for you now. He said, even more than that, what you're seeing now is the next generation of children and grandchildren coming down. The next generation of Talmid Chachamim. You're connecting to the finer experience of what's going on behind what you see in the physical world around you. And you're experiencing Hashem at work. You're experiencing Hashem's care. So he gives a very profound mashal for this. He says, if you live the first way, so it's all about just, what can I sense out of this world? What can I get out of this world in terms of, well, food and all the other senses? It's like we said another shiurim. I come into this world, I don't try to figure too much out. I know it takes me a couple of days to discover my taste buds, and it doesn't take much longer to figure out what can be done with the taste buds. And then you have your career of the next 100 years laid out for you. Put those taste buds to work. All kinds of good matches to the taste buds around, and that's it. And then you'll have the person who will be utilizing them to be really connecting to what's going on behind the scene, to be living the deeper level of all that. So he says the mashal, he gives the mashal as follows, a very profound mashal. This is at the end of Perek Gimel. He says, when a person is living it the second way, so what he's actually getting out of all that gashmias that he's experiencing around him, what he's getting out of it is ruchnias. And what he's doing is, he might be eating the same food as the other guy is eating, but where the first guy is eating for the purpose of, I'm here to pamper my taste buds, I wouldn't even call it a gastronomic experience, because usually it's just doing damage to once you get to that level of the intestines. But he's living at the, I want my mouth to enjoy. While the other person, who may be eating the same thing but connecting to what's going on behind it, is busy amassing an account toward the next world. His experience of the physical world is actually busy racking up a credit of Olam Haba, more and more and more, as he experiences the world around him, if he's living with it in this way. And this is what he sees in the world. He sees in the world, with all of its physical facade, means of connecting to the deeper level and of preparing for his real life. The understanding that, yes, there's a whole physical world here, but all of that is really just like the pregnancy period, which is during which I'm going to turn myself, who I'm going to be when I'm actually born at the end of it, when a person leaves this world. So with all the physical, with all of his physical experiences, with the whole world operating around him, he sees in this shelves that has to be taking things off and putting into his basket for what he's going to be taking with him to the next world. And this includes all the physical experiences of this world. So he gives the following mashal. And this is toward the end of the perek. It's the paragraph that begins, Uma nidbu bezeh. I'm going to say the mashal outside without reading through it. He says, it's like two brothers who inherited a very large piece of land from their father. And they split it into two. One gets the east side, the other gets the west side. Now this piece of land The father hasn't touched it in years. It's been left untouched for decades. So what do you see on this piece of land? What you see on this piece of land is a very, very big thicket of weeds, useless weeds, plants, etc. It's just one big mess. It's one big mess. You're not going to get anything out of it. So, one of the brothers was a wiser person, and the other wasn't as wise. So what did the wiser person do? He said that the wiser person said, I got a piece of land, it's a huge land, acres and acres and acres, but it's not going to provide me with parnassa. So therefore, what do I have to do now? I have to go hire myself out. I have to have supper tonight. You know, there's a lot of potential in this land. If I will put the work into, this is a land that could be very, very fertile. If you put the work into clearing it all out and plowing it and preparing it, etc., you will create a very profitable piece of land. But it's a project that's going to take months or a year to really do, and you have to eat in the interim. So what do you do? So the more intelligent one said, okay, what I have to do is I have to hire myself out to other people. I'm going to have to plow someone else's field so someone else can make profit. Instead of tending to my own field, I'm going to have to work in someone else's field and make 2 coins a day. Now, so he worked 9 to 5, he works in someone else's field. He gets his money for the day. He can go home and buy supper. Now, he has an hour to an hour and a half in the evening of free time. So what does he do? He gets to work in his field. He gets to work in his field, and again, we're talking acres and acres and acres. On the first day, he manages to actually cut through with an axe. He manages to chop through about 5 feet of thicket. And you still have the stumps of all these plants there. But he cleared out about five by 5 feet of thicket in that area. It'll be a very, very long time until he's going to get anywhere. But this is what he would do day after day. This is what he would do day after day. Now, besides that, what he would do is, if he would make 2 coins a day, if he needed 1.5 coins for food, he would put aside 0.5 coin. He would put aside 0.5 coin. Then, actually, really, this mashal works a little differently. He would put aside, let's say, 1/10 of what he made every day. This means that every 10 days he accumulated enough to earn himself a day off. So every night he would put in 1 to 1.5 hours of chopping a very small amount of that thicket. Every 10 days he'd accumulate enough to take a day off, and then he'd dedicate a full day to chopping at that thicket. And this is what he did. It was very, very tedious, slow work, but he did this for 2, 3, 4 years until he actually cleared out the whole field. And the next stage was plowing it, which again, give an hour and a half a day with a full day every 10 days. But slowly he's getting to the stage of actually being ready to plant his field. And again, a very limited amount of time per day. But he finally got that project done. And then finally he has his first crop. This crop now enables him to, he can sell it now. And at this point already, he's reached a point where he's actually making profit from the field. So selling it is a bit of a process. He still has to be working for other people. But at this point, he's working for somebody else a week, and he's busy with his own stuff for a week. Slowly but surely, through his work, it turns into a situation where more and more of his time is able to be dedicated to his own field, which is just going to be providing him with exponential profits, and less time he has to be busy with other people's fields, until finally he already has an ongoing profit, an ongoing yield coming from his field, and he's able to just now be expanding and enhancing, etc., and just upping his profits, and now he doesn't have to be busy with anybody else's fields at all. It was a slow, tedious, patient process, but it got him there. And now, all he's busy with is his own business and just earning more and more money and enhancing his field more and more and stepping up his lifestyle. The other brother, when he saw that it's going to take years to get anywhere with this field, he'd come home at night, his free hour, he'd sit back and relax, do crossword puzzles, whatever. And if he had any extra money, he bought some extra goodies at the end of the day. He never, ever got around to touching his field. He has a field that could theoretically be providing him mamish with a luxurious life, with a wealthy lifestyle, but he stays as a person who simply works for other people's, in other people's field for the day, comes home to his humble supper with a little bit of added goodies that he got with his extra few cents, and relaxes for that hour, and basically stays in that same state of stagnation for his whole life. So the Chovetz Chavavos says that this is basically the approach to Olam Hazeh. Are we going to approach Olam Hazeh as understanding that we want whatever leisure we have in our minds or in our time to be working on the Ruchniyah side of Olam Hazeh? And then slowly but surely, as you get used to thinking in these terms, and as you get used to, it's a slow process to train yourself to think this way. But as you get used to seeing Hashem in your supper, and then seeing Hashem in your clothing, and seeing Hashem in the function of your body, and then starting to see Hashem in all the various aspects of your life, and more you can make it grow, and you start seeing Hashem, you start seeing your work throughout the day as interaction with Hashem, your dealings with your family, slowly but surely, the spirituality starts taking over all of what used to be just mundane life, just a physical existence. And you can become a person who's still living in this world, but your life by now, through those efforts of a little more thought, a little more focus, your entire life is now one big spiritual endeavor, a give and take with Hashem. You're living in a different plane, and your entire life is busy just generating Olam Haba. Your eating is generating Olam Haba. Your showering, your work, your interactions with your family, everything about your life, your sleeping is generating Olam Haba, because it's all about reaching past the simple physical facade of it and getting to the deeper meaning behind it and living with that. This is what the Chovetz Chavavos is exhorting us to do. Bezras Hashem, we should be zeichet to do that properly and to already be living in the zone of Olam Haba here in Olam Hazeh and get mamish the best of both worlds, to enjoy Olam Hazeh to its fullest while maximizing the opportunities that it provides for us in terms of Olam Haba. Okay, we'll stop the recording and unmute, and then we'll part.